This is the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris. I'm glad you're listening, and I'm glad you don't have Ebola, although you never had any chance of getting Ebola, let's be honest, just like you weren't going to die from SARS or the avian flu or H1N1 or West Nile virus or any of the other public health crises that were pumped up to panic levels in this country by our media. And in fact, that is the topic of a book by my next guest. His name is Mark Stein. He's going to be appearing this afternoon at 1 o'clock at the St. Louis Jewish Book Festival to talk about his book, American Panic, A History of Who Scares Us and Why. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And I'm glad I don't have to be in a hazmat suit to worry about any of those things, as you, neither do you. I talk often on this show about how this country runs on fear, or maybe it's fear-mongering. And you've looked back at a history of things that induced panic in people, not necessarily riots in the street kind of panic, but that fear that is the backbone of America, it seems, right?
Well, I feel a little unpatriotic and even wrong-headed to say backbone of America, but it is because of, God bless it, our free speech, right to assembly. It is very much intertwined in that the backbone of America in the First Amendment. So it's something that, as Americans, as a free people, we're going to have to live with and have lived with for over 200 years.
But, you know, Election Day was yesterday, and the build-up to Election Day is always politicians screaming about how the other one is going to ruin our city, our county, our state, our country, et cetera. And we're being told by screamers on particularly cable news channels to worry about immigrants and Al-Qaeda and ISIS and Ebola and one right after the other. Is this something modern, or when you look back on the history, is it something that's always been there?
Oh, it's always been there. It's always been there. And particularly, you know, I can't climb into an alarmist's head to know if that person is genuinely alarmed or, in the instances you're citing, exploiting fear or creating fear for some personal agenda, usually a political agenda. But that second type, where they're generating the fear, that the first time that really spread across the country was indeed like in the 1820s, something very much forgotten by most Americans today called the anti-Masonic panic. Believe it or not, there was widespread panic about these guys today who go around in the little red fez with a sequin thing for their Masonic lodges, fear that they were this secret society that was becoming the unseen hand controlling politics. They formed something called the Anti-Masonic Party. They got candidates elected to state legislatures, summoned to Congress, folded within about 10, 15 years because finally the Freemasons were not trying to take over the country. They just really had nothing verifiable to point to. But it goes all the way back to the early 19th century.
And there have always been conspiracy theories about one group or another or one event in American history or another. And what does it say about America's willingness to accept these claims without evidence to the point where, you know, you just mentioned for 10 or 15 years, we elected people who were telling people a lie, essentially?
Well, I think to keep it in perspective, the anti-Masonic Party never really gained a majority of the country. And really what my book tries to get at is why is it that some people panic when others don't? And are there recurring elements in these different panics, starting with the Salem witch hunt in the 1690s, up to the ones we see today, that might tell us something about the kind of person who is susceptible to panic? We're all susceptible a little bit, by the way. But rarely, actually, have a majority of Americans been so panicked that they legislated panic. There have been instances, of course. Japanese internment, one of the most recent, others involving immigration and things like that. But for the most part, when you think about Catholics, Jews, Hispanics, other groups, Hispanics a little bit with immigration, but with other groups, the majority of Americans have not really responded to that to that degree of fear-mongering.
And one of the proofs of that was the election of our 35th president, John Fitzgerald Kennedy, because mm-hmm. there was a whole campaign against him based mm-hmm. on fear of him becoming the first Roman Catholic president, and he won't follow the Constitution, he'll follow the Pope. That's what his opponents were saying.
Right.
Not necessarily inside Nixon's core, but there were people in the country who were pushing that as the reason not to vote for Kennedy, right?
There absolutely were. There was a man named Blanchard who published best-selling books as when Kennedy was a senator because he saw this coming, warning about this. John Kennedy had to make a special speech in front of, I believe it was, might have been the Missouri Synod, I can't quite remember, of ministers, saying he will be an American first, he will not be following the Pope. And that panic against Catholics, which, by the way, had more violence than I ever realized until I looked into it for this book, goes all the way back to the founding of the country, where I believe it was eight of the first 13 states prohibited a Catholic from holding public office
wow.
in their state constitutions.
You know, you mentioned the beginning of the country, and you write about this a little bit in the book, about invoking the Founding Fathers.
Mm-hmm.
We hear this all the time. This is not what the Founding Fathers intended, or this is what the Founding, as if they were inside the heads of these 18th century men who did create what became the United States of America.
Yeah.
How often are those claims even close to true?
Never, unless we're talking about somebody who's advocating rejoining the British Empire. One of the recurring elements that sometimes suck people in oftentimes is called an absolute. And in its simplest form, of course, it would be something like, all black people are savage. Okay, well, that's an easy-to-spot absolute. But sometimes absolutes can be very subtle, and the Founding Fathers is one of the most subtlest and most frequently used because it implies that the Founding Fathers all thought alike. These guys did think alike in one respect. They all agreed we should not be part of England. But other than that, I don't think they could divide a lunch check without getting into an argument.
Now, when we talk about groups that have been prejudicially discriminated against in this country with fear-mongering attached to it, it's not just the Catholics then, but the Jews certainly have had it at times through their history. Muslims mm-hmm. are getting it now. But mm-hmm. it's not just religious. If you go back to the immigration, you know, people look at Mexicans or people from Central America coming across our southern border now. There were times when it was people coming in from Europe, wasn't it?
Absolutely. There was great fear of the Irish, huge fear about the Irish, kind of tied to the fear of Catholic, but when the Irish started coming in large numbers in the 1840s, Chinese, when they started coming in great numbers in the 1850s, of course, Eastern European Jews, although that's its own kind of subtopic here, but there was certainly a great deal of discrimination against them too. Yeah,
and I'm old enough to live through the Cold War and the duck and cover years
myself too,
when we all had to know where the fallout shelter was because those dirty commies are going to drop bombs on us any day.
Yeah,
and on and on and on, and that goes to a different part of the fear culture, and I like to think that is not really about discrimination or prejudice but more about power. Would you agree?
Very much so, and very often, as in the Cold War in the 50s, a fear that may well, in fact, be well-founded of some foreign power, in that case the Soviet Union, people will tap into that fear to create a domestic fear of in that case, communists here in this country. There was a book put out 1 year after the Soviets detonated their atom bomb, which is a legitimate fear, I think, for us, or was, called Red Channels, probably familiar to yourself and anyone in broadcasting. It was a listing of, I believe it was 150 in the initial edition, people in the media and in entertainment who, by virtue of any association at all, were branded as potential communists. People like Leonard Bernstein, Aaron Copland, my favorite was Howard K. Smith, if those of you who remember that newscaster from ABC. It's like, really? They're communists? There's often that kind of a foreign fear that gets that feeds into a current fear. I might mention a flip side of that, by the way. There's a great deal of course, fear of Mexican immigrants and Hispanic immigrants in America today. Way back in our history, when we had not yet put away the idea that we might conquer Mexico and make it one of our states, a lot of the things that were written about Mexicans were about how industrious they were, and quite the opposite of the kind of things you would later hear, because this was a side not trying to create panic, but trying to create allure for let's make them part of us and take them away from Spain. Again, very much tied to power. Back then, the power was Spain. Red Scare, the power was Soviet Union.
Yeah, and when you talk about foreign enemies coming to get us, of course, that brings us right back to today where, you know, we had Al-Qaeda and the attacks of 9/11/01, and now, you know, the worries about ISIS, although they seem to be contained to the Middle East. That gets pumped up in the news every day, and certainly during the recent election season, and probably in the next couple of years as well, as we head towards the presidential election. Part of that story to me, Mark, has to include how we, because of the fear mongers pressing these topics on us repeatedly, allow our rights to be trampled in the name of security and fear. And I wonder if that has a basis in history as well.
It does. It does. And really, it's an excellent question, because it cuts to the core of where this book ends up. In the book, I track various rhetorical devices that just, they so much haven't changed that there are times I'll quote something that'll sound like it's from today and say, yeah, but it's actually from 100 years ago. And when I step back in the conclusion to the book, at the end of this, and look at these various rhetorical devices that I cite and kind of create labels for, what they all point to, and I think this is addressing your question, is to the extent that we need certitude, each of us as an individual, to that extent we're susceptible to this kind of fear-mongering, because what it offers us is the comfort of certitude. It's a queer comfort in this case, because it's the certitude of fear, but at least we know what we fear, even though the facts may not conform and the complexities are washed away. And as to why some people panic and others don't, my shorthand answer to that is to look at jealousy, which is a need for certitude in a relationship. Some people are more jealous than others. Why? Well, for that, you got to climb into each person's head, and that's beyond any author's ability to do. But I think that's really where the nub of this is. To the extent that we need certitude in our lives, we all need some. If we didn't have it, we'd walk down the sidewalk the same way we cross a creek on wet rocks. We need some. Some people need a lot more than others, and those are the people who are susceptible to the fear-mongering. With lack of facts, or with correlation, causation, playing statistical tricks on people, and this kind of thing that we just see again and again and again.
Sounds like you have the basis of the next book, American Psychiatry.
Well, it's really, you know, it is a behavior,
yeah.
What we're talking about. I don't think it's a national behavior, but it is a behavior that many people throughout the world are subject to, and because, again, of our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, we're subject to a lot more bombardment of this kind of language.
Yep. The book is called American Panic, A History of Who Scares Us and Why. The author is Mark Stein. He'll be here in just a few hours, 1 o'clock this afternoon at the J at the St. Louis Jewish Book Festival. Mark, congratulations on the book, and thanks so much for joining me here today.
Thank you, Paul.
I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS.